But more importantly, it stresses personal autonomy. That one live a life based on rationality, a rationality that's inherent in nature. We call that natural law. So one lives according to natural law in such a way as to keep the external world from impinging on one's tranquility. And he expresses this in a famous passage he writes to Maria Cosway, a correspondence we'll look at later, known as The Head and the Heart. The head speaks, and this head is clearly Stoic, "The art of life is the art of avoiding pain. And he is the best pilot who steers clearest of the rocks and shoals with which he is beset. The most effectual means of being secure against pain is to retire within ourselves and to suffice for our own happiness. Those which depend on ourselves are the only pleasures a wise man will count on, for nothing is ours which another may deprive us of." All right, so that's on the one hand Jefferson's theory of the good, of what is desirable. There's another dimension to Jefferson's ethical thought, which is his theory of morality. What I mean by that is, where do moral judgments come from? What causes them? How do we explain them? And there he reaches not back to the classical epic, but into the modern age of enlightenment, particularly the Scottish Enlightenment. He embraces the doctrine of moral sense that's associated with Hutcheson, Smith, and Reid, and other figures famous in the Scottish Enlightenment. Well, I want to quickly describe what the moral sense is. The moral sense argues that rather than reflecting on phenomena and rationally drawing moral rules from them, we in fact have a sort of instinctual or sentimental response to phenomena, and that response is distinctly moral. The simplest way of putting it is that it is essentially the 18th century scientific secularization of 17th century religious notion of conscience. As he writes to his daughter, Martha Jefferson, "If ever you are about to say anything amiss or to do anything wrong, consider beforehand. You will feel something within you which will tell you it is wrong and ought not to be said or done. This is your conscience, and be sure to obey it." Well, one of the advantages of rationalism is that, one of the advantages of moral sense doctrine over rationalism is that it's democratic. Rationalism appeals to philosophies, to philosophers in ethical theory, and the reason is if moral judgments are based on reason, and reason itself is a result of training and education, then the most moral people are philosophers. Moral sense doctrine, however, is really democratic because everyone is equipped with this sensual reaction. As he states to Peter Carr, "State a moral case to a plowman and a professor. The former will decide it as well, and often better than the latter, because he has not been laid astray by artificial rules." Now, there are problems with the doctrine of moral sense. The obvious one is that it's not a sense in any directly literal way. I mean, my sense of vision comes from my eyes. If by some horrible accident they were removed, I would no longer have that sense. My hearing comes from my ears. That could be removed. Where exactly is the moral sense? How do we localize it? How do we, in fact, conceptualize what is clearly a metaphor? Well, one of the ways of thinking about it that's associated with Francis Hutcheson and the 3rd Earl of Shaftesbury was to aestheticize it, to argue that moral judgment was like aesthetic judgment. It was like aesthetic taste. In the same way that one looks at a work of art or a scene of nature and is immediately affected with a disinterested sense of its beauty, so one looks at human activities and is immediately affected with a sense of the beauty of its moral excellence. To Robert Skipwith, he writes, "When any original act of charity or of gratitude, for instance, is presented either to our sight or imagination, we are deeply impressed with its beauty and feel a strong desire in ourselves of doing charitable and grateful acts also." So we can see he draws heavily on Hutcheson and Shaftesbury there. But there's a problem with seeing the moral sense in aesthetic terms, and that is relativity. If it is the case that our sense judgments of morality are in fact purely instinctual, we're faced with two facts. One, moral judgments differ, and given those differences in moral judgments, we have to invoke the principle de gustibus non disputatum. There is no arguing over taste. Well, Hume tried to solve this problem, and he did so by seeing the moral sense not as an aesthetic response, but as an instinctual response, one that's prompted by utility. And that means that if utilities or usefulness, whatever produces the happiness for the greatest number, varies in different contexts, we'll get varying moral judgments.